car.
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 Isn't it?
Yeah, you are kind of in
the less, way. More, the most. R sound. Yep. We're kind of in the middle. That's
let's,
what I always thought.
Let's do mother.
Car, car, car.
Let's do mother. Mother.
Mother.
Mother.
Welcome to episode 25 of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. I'm here as usual with Reza. Hello, Reza.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And this is a special episode of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig because we have two special guests. Reza and I are sitting here with two lovely ladies, with Melissa from the United States of America. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And also with Becky from the UK.
Hi, Craig. Nice to meet you again.
Nice to see you, Becky. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. Do you mind if we ask you a few questions just so the listeners get to know you a bit?
Sure.
Right. Melissa, what do you do for a living?
I'm a full-time student studying at the University of Massachusetts Amherst.
Mm-hmm. And what are you doing in Spain right now?
I am getting some sun.
Uh-huh.
On a holiday.
Uh-huh. So have you come here from the United States?
No, I'm studying for a semester at the Queen's University of Belfast in Northern Ireland.
That certainly rings a bell since I used to work there.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. What a coincidence. Yeah. What about you, Becky?
What am I doing in Spain?
Yeah. As if I didn't know the answer.
Yeah. I've come to stay with my friend Reza.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Where are you from exactly in the UK, Becky?
I'm from Cornwall, which is a very rural area down in the southwest corner of the country.
Cornwall, where the cream teas come from.
Absolutely, where the cream teas come from.
Can you explain to the listeners exactly what a cream tea is?
Well,
because I'm not sure myself.
A cream tea is a scone, so an English, a Cornish scone.
Or a scone, as we say in Belfast.
Well, we do argue a little bit about the pronunciation, but...
But they're both accepted, aren't they?
They are both accepted, but scone is the correct one, I think, if you're from Cornwall. So.
And a scone is kind of like a mixture of a cake and bread, is it? Because it's quite hard, isn't it? It's not as soft as a cake.
Yeah, it's a sort of doughy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, and but it is, if you have them fresh, they are very soft.
So if you have a cream tea, then you must have a scone or scone with it.
Yeah, so you have, your cream tea consists of a scone that's cut in half, and then it's covered in jam.
Mmm.
And then on top of that, Cornish clotted cream.
Oh, low cholesterol.
Yeah, very, very much so. And
So the cream isn't actually in the tea?
No, the cream isn't in the tea, because on the side, you have a cup of tea as well.
Okay.
And you have some milk in the tea. So even though it's a cream tea, it doesn't refer to the drink. It refers to it as a small meal, like high tea.
Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's clear.
I've been to Cornwall to visit Becky. Beautiful place. Have you been there, Craig? I can't remember.
I've been there. We used to go there when I was very young. We used to go there with the family to have holidays in the rain. It's a beautiful part of England. Southwest of England is beautiful. And we used to go there when I was very, very young. So I don't really remember too much about it, except the scenery and how green it is. It's a beautiful part of the UK. Have you been there?
No, I haven't.
You should go. Go and have a cream tea.
Okay.
Becky, people in Cornwall feel quite different, quite distinct from other English people. I'm not just talking about British people like Scottish, Northern Irish, Welsh, but the Cornish feel a bit different to the rest of the English. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, we're a very proud region of the country. Cornwall's got its own flag. It has its own food and regional drinks and things like that. But also we've got our own language. So we're Celtic as well, so we're a little bit like the Irish and Scots in that sense.
Yeah. Whereas most of the English would consider themselves Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah. So, and we are actually a minority. We've recently been given minority status because even though it's a beautiful part of the world, a beautiful part of the country, people go there on holiday, there's not an awful lot of money and industry and things down there. So,
was there industry in the past?
Mainly, it was agriculture, so farming. fishing and china clay excavation and export. So,
And Melissa, exactly where are you from in the US?
I'm from a suburb of New York City, just about 30 minutes north of Manhattan.
Right. Do you go into Manhattan often, or do you usually...
Usually. My best friend has an apartment on the Upper West Side, so I go in and stay with him pretty often, and we'll meet for dinner and go see a show.
Okay. So you've been spending some time traveling in Europe. What are your impressions, and what are the noticeable differences between Europe and the US?
Well, I mean, I can't really generalize about Europe because I've been to... This will be the 9th country that I've been to in Europe.
Wow.
So very, very different. You know, in the U.S., it's kind of like... Although politics and, you know, there's a lot of cultural differences across the U.S., it's very similar, you know, traveling from coast to coast. But here, you know, I can get in an airplane and fly an hour and be in a different language, different culture, different religion... And I've really enjoyed seeing that. I think that's pretty cool.
Is this your first time in Europe?
No. I was here, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. We went to Prague for a week, which was nice.
Oh, beautiful. But it's your first time in Spain?
Yes.
Do you know any Spanish?
I learned about 4 words in the
car. Tell the listeners what words you've learned so far.
Do you want me to butcher them with my accent?
Try it.
Okay. Hola. Which is hello.
Yes. Hola.
Adios. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Gracias. Por favor.
It's a very important word. Café con leche.
Café con leche, yes.
Café con leche. Becky, do you know any Spanish?
No.
You've been here before. What's your excuse? This is Melissa's first time.
I actually don't find it very easy to learn different languages, so I forget. If I'm not hearing it every day, then I forget what the words are, so... I'm quite good at recognising language, so if somebody says something to me, I'm quite good at understanding what they're saying, but I can't remember specific words to speak speak back, so I can usually remember the names of most foodstuffs and drinks and things.
That's all
the bathroom?
Yeah.
Can I have a beer, please? Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Tell me, Melissa, you must hear a lot of people speaking Spanish in the United States.
Yeah, but it's a very different Spanish than...
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what differences do you notice about the Spanish, between the Spanish spoken in Spain and the Spanish you might hear in some barrios, some neighborhoods of New York?
Well, they have, like, the rough R pronunciation here that they don't really have in Mexican and, like, Latin American Spanish, which I've noticed just listening to people speak on the street.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems a lot less... It's not as pretty, you know... It just seems a lot more kind of slang and...
In Spanish?
No, in America.
I prefer South American Spanish pronunciation. I prefer the harder Z. Z.
Yeah,
like cerveza. I prefer cerveza.
Gracias.
Yes. Gracias and not gracias.
Yeah, Ceciando. Isn't that what they call it? Ceciando instead of theciando.
Is it?
Isn't
it?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you say s, it's ceciando. If you say th, it's theciando.
And we've spoken about the music in Argentinian Spanish that we like. Yeah. Up and down of the voice. That's not really nice.
Uh-huh. I imagine, Melissa, in America, you don't come across many Spanish people. I mean, from Spain.
No, not right. Unless they're on vacation.
But you do come across Mexicans.
What does come across mean?
Come across is... meet someone by chance.
I mean, I went to the school that I went to, like the high school that I went to, was a very diverse school. There were a lot of Hispanic people in my school, a lot of people from Mexico, a lot of people from Colombia. I'm not sure. Mostly Mexico and Colombia.
Okay.
And, like, I heard Spanish a lot just because I had a lot of friends in my high school, you know. Caucasian was kind of one of the minorities. There were a lot of African-American people, a lot of Hispanic people in my school. But, you know, and it really depends, especially in New York, it really depends where you are. Like, the city that I live in, which is called White Plains, has a big Hispanic population. But you go, you know, 10 minutes to the south to a town called Scarsdale, and you're lucky if you see anyone who's not Caucasian.
Yeah.
You're going to spend a semester in Belfast, where I'm from, studying at the university there. Why did you choose Belfast? Because if I understood you correctly earlier, you said you don't have any Irish ancestors.
No.
So why Belfast?
I really wanted to go to Ireland. You know, I wanted to go somewhere they spoke English. you know, whatever kind of English it may be. I wanted to go somewhere where they spoke English so I wouldn't have the language barrier, so I'd be able to understand, you know, and, you know, get around. And I wanted to go to Ireland. I really did, because I'd heard it was really beautiful and really green, and that I really love being outside.
Have you tasted the Guinness yet?
I've had 2 pints of Guinness, one at the Guinness factory and one at a pub.
And what's your opinion?
My first one I couldn't finish because I didn't know that Guinness was a meal, so I had already eaten lunch. Yeah. So I didn't know that you can't have Guinness with food, you have to have it as your food.
Had you tasted it before, or was it your first?
I had never had Guinness before, no. My dad warned me, he said, like, it's an acquired taste, you might not like it. But at the Guinness factory, they taught you how to taste the Guinness. You have to, like, take a little bit in the front and then flush it to the back of your... Oh, some crazy stuff.
People say that it doesn't taste anywhere as good. It's not something you can export.
No.
Totally true.
Because you
totally
have to,
true.
You have to pour it at a certain temperature, and, like, the tap has a certain level of nitrogen, and you pour it this way, then let it sit and pour it that way at 45 degrees. I learned... I took a class at the Guinness factory. I'm a certified... Guinness pourer. I have a certificate that says I know how to pour a pint of Guinness.
Well, there you go. That's your career right there.
Yeah, but I tried it from a bottle.
Oh, when no!
We went to an Irish...
Guinness never from a bottle.
...pub or something. We went to an Irish pub when I was in Copenhagen, and I tried it, and they gave it to us in, from a bottle or a can or something. It was just gross. It was disgusting.
Yeah, it's not the same. It has to be from the pump.
I finished my second pint. I couldn't finish the first one.
Yeah. Irish people are really particular about how their Guinness is poured in a pub. If they feel it hasn't been poured well, they will ask for it to be done again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They will complain. Yeah.
We'll send it back.
Yeah. Becky, do you reckon clotted cream from Cornwall travels well? Does it taste the same outside Cornwall? That's a delicacy of Cornwall. We were talking about cream earlier, and clotted cream is what exactly? What's this clotted cream?
Clotted cream, you can't get it everywhere. It's quite unusual. Because I was brought up with it, I presumed that that was what cream was. You know, when I went to somebody else's house, quite an old age, really, so 18, 19, and somebody poured cream. It was a real shock, because to me it looked like...
For you it wasn't liquid, it was something more solid.
Yeah, it's a solid, it's got... I'm trying to think of something else that's the same sort of consistency. But you spoon it out, it's a bit like ice cream in a way.
Yes.
That consistency.
Yeah, ice cream when it's going a bit soft.
Yeah.
Pate, a bit like pate?
Hummus?
Hummus, yeah, that consistency,
yeah,
isn't it?
That sort of consistency. And, basically, you take the cream from the milk and you bake it very slowly in a tray in the oven.
Yeah.
Let it go cold and there you go, it's clotted cream.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I've just thought of a word which might help our listeners since they speak Spanish. To clot, a synonym more or less would be coagulate, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Coagulate.
Coagular in Spanish.
Yeah, so it's similar. Blood. Clotted, coagulated.
Yeah.
Yeah, that will help Spanish speakers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have... do you have any more questions, Reza? Because I've got some quick-fire hot seat questions here for the end.
Yeah, I just... Because I've just met Melissa myself, so I really don't know much about her. I'd like to find out a little bit more. Melissa, what's your idea of how to have a good time? How to have fun?
Are you asking me how to have fun on a Saturday afternoon or a Friday night?
Oh, well, tell...
Different kinds of fun.
Explain the difference for you.
Well, you know, as a university, they're different kinds of fun.
Well, if it's a long party, it could be the same thing.
Yeah.
You could join up into one.
That's true. Well, I mean, in America, you're talking about? I mean, as an American university student, I'm technically underage. I'm only 20.
You're studying at UMass, right? University
yes,
of Massachusetts.
Which is a big, you know, you see big universities with fraternities and sororities and huge football games. American football games, you know, with, you know, painting on your face and screaming and lots of drunk people. That's my university.
Right.
That's pretty much exactly what we're like the classic, we have like 30,000 people, huge school.
So when the weekend arrives at the University of Massachusetts, are there like parties everywhere? Could you just pretty much go?
Yeah, partying starts on Thursday night at American universities. You know, you drink Thursday, you drink Friday, you drink Saturday, and then Sunday you do all your homework, which is different that I found in Belfast.
Do you usually have parties with your like group of friends? Is it easy to get invited to these parties, or do you have to be in groups that are quite closed?
It depends if you're okay. It's different like a, if you're like a girl.
Is it a fraternity?
A fraternity. Those the frat parties they're called. You know, fraternities have their own houses right off campus or sometimes on campus. It depends who you know, and it depends if you're a boy or if you're a girl. If you're a girl, it's very easy, you know,
to get invited.
Yeah, because there's this road at my university called Frat Row, where you can basically dress up in heels and a short skirt, and you know, get a little drunk and walk into any house, and they'll let you in pretty much if you're a girl.
Sounds like Sin City.
But the boys have to have, most fraternities have a rule that, like, if a boy's going to come to a party, they have to bring at least two or three girls with them. So the ratio is more girls to boys, yeah.
So you have to bring girls with you if you go to a party.
I don't, unless you know someone specifically at the party.
Do you have to bring booze, beer, alcohol?
They have alcohol at the parties usually, but you got to be careful just to make sure it's not drugged or anything.
See, in London, we used to have to take drink. We had to take beer. We had to take alcohol. In the States, you have to take women.
Well, you pre-drink with your friends in your dorm or in your friend's apartment. Usually, you know, if I'm going to a party where I'm going to be drinking, if I'm going to a frat party or a house party, because people just have parties at their houses, if it's not specifically a fraternity, I'll drink before and then go there and, you know, you dance and hang out, because I don't want to have to worry about carrying a cup with me or, you know, making sure that nothing gets put in my drink, you know, and I don't really trust the drinks that they have at the parties. So I'd rather just, you know, drink with my friends and be done with it. But I don't drink because I'm underage.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
That goes without saying.
Of course. Yeah. So that's like,
you're underage. Sorry. How old are you?
I'm 20.
Ah, interesting. Underage to drink, in the United States.
Yeah.
Well, in New York.
Well, I've enjoyed...
But not in the UK.
I've enjoyed...
Not in Spain.
Europe very much. I had a pint of Carlsberg at the Dublin airport before I came to...
And that was perfectly legal, listeners, by the way.
Yeah, they did.
Although in New York it would be illegal.
It would be. Right. Yeah, they
what,
don't
what, what would happen if you were drinking alcohol in your private room or in the room of a friend and some policeman or security person saw you? Would they arrest you?
Well, what would happen, it depends if you're at university. At my university, like the other kind of parties we'll do if you're not going out is, you know, you and me and a bunch of friends will sit in my room, you know, a couple guitars, a couple bottles of wine, and we'll, you know, drink and talk, and, you know, that's what I prefer doing on a Friday night. It's not really a party. But if we're making a lot of noise, the RA, like the residential assistant, will knock on the door and, you know, say, be quiet. Or if we're making a lot of noise, they'll write us up, which, like, we get, like, a little kind of detention slip.
But they wouldn't call the police.
If you're at a party and the party gets broken up, the police and a university won't arrest you unless there's, like, hard drugs going on or, you know, a ton of people. And even so, you can usually escape out the back door or something. But
apparently, allegedly.
Allegedly. But, you know, I've heard of parties being broken up where people... And the police at the university are pretty much ex-university students. You know, they went to UMass and they, you know...
They've done it before.
Exactly. Like, they just basically say, guys, like, you know, calm down, turn the volume down. Or if a party gets broken up by the police, they just say, okay, everybody leave.
Yeah. Okay.
It's, you know, if there's harder stuff, if people are smoking or, like, doing drugs or... You know, if it's a really wild party and there's like 200 people in a little house, you know, they might try and get some people and write you up and take you down to the station for a night or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're caught drinking not at a university setting, it's very different.
It's a different thing.
Yeah.
Have you been to America, Becky?
I have. I've been really fortunate. I've been four times. The first time I flew over to New Orleans and I drove around the Deep South.
Wow.
So
you drove on the right side of the room?
I did.
How was that?
Yeah, it's okay. Actually, the worst thing about driving in the US for me was there were so many lanes.
Yeah.
And in the UK, all the lanes go at different speeds. So, but people can overtake you in any lane in America, I think.
Really?
Generally, the right lane is for slower, the middle lane is for traveling, the left lane is for passing.
In America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I went to the Deep South, and then I, the following year, I flew over to San Francisco.
Oh, I love San Francisco.
And then drove down the Highway 1
down
to Mexico, and then all up around the Grand Canyon.
How long was that trip? That sounds like a long trip.
And it was over 3 weeks. And
Grand Canyon is gorgeous.
I went to Alaska as well. I've been to Alaska. And
it's been more places than I have. America.
But interesting places, though, not, you know... Alaska.
I'd love to go to New Orleans. That particularly attracts me.
Me too.
Yeah, I'd love to go back.
Did you go before Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, Yeah, it wasn't long before, actually. So, but it was somewhere I'd always wanted to go because I used to teach dance, so I'm quite interested in like jazz music and things. And so I'd always wanted to go there so I could sort of listen to the music. And also tap dancing comes from that area of the...
Isn't New Orleans where jazz originates from?
Yeah.
And then it kind of went to New York after that?
And then as part of my English degree...
Mississippi Delta.
That's it. And as part of my English degree, I studied some slave narratives sort of, as part of an autobiographical unit. And I just really like all the culture, don't I?
New Orleans is a unique city, isn't it, in America? Because there's a huge Spanish and French influence.
Very French.
Whereas not such a strong British influence. It's more Spanish and French down there, isn't it?
Mardi Gras.
And you can see the French influence in the architecture of it.
And the food, perhaps, as well.
Yeah.
A lot of seafood down there. A lot of oysters and
shrimps.
Gumbo.
Yeah, the gumbo. Yeah.
Gator gumbo.
Gumbo.
I've been to New York as well.
What
did
you think of New York?
Loved it.
I find a lot of people that I've met don't like New York. Like, they either love it or they hate it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people get such a jaded view when they come to New York.
Jaded mean?
Jaded is like there's a bias, like a very narrow perspective. Kind of distorted would be a good synonym. A very distorted view of New York, because tourists come to New York, they come to Manhattan. But they come to Manhattan. But they don't come to Manhattan, they go to Times Square.
Yeah.
And they go to Rockefeller Center, and they go to the Empire State Building. And that's not Manhattan, that's tourist crappy Manhattan. Mm. You know, so I always try and take people. I have some friends from Northern Ireland who are coming this summer to stay with me, and I'm going to make sure that I show them the real New York.
Where would you take a visitor? Which places do you suggest they go to?
You have to go to Times Square because, you know, everyone wants to see Times Square and take their picture on the big red steps and all that crap. But you can go to Times Square. I'll stand like three blocks out where everything is half the price. But, I mean, first of all, if you're going to go up one of the buildings, don't go up the Empire State Building. Go up the top of the Rock, the Rockefeller Center Building.
Because you can see the Empire State Building
from the
Rock.
Exactly, the view is much better.
Good tip.
The price of it is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And fewer people, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also cheaper. Less line, cheaper. It's not cheap, but it's a better view, though. The Rockefeller Building is a much better view.
Right.
So obviously there. And then I would go, my favorite spots in New York is a place called Chelsea Market, which is an area like kind of the lower end of Manhattan.
In the Chelsea area?
Chelsea Market is like an indoor kind of, what's the big market in London?
Covent Garden?
The indoor market.
Portobello's outside.
Borough Market.
That's what I'm thinking. Borough Market.
That's quite a lot of food and stuff.
Yeah, it's a big food market, and it has a couple stores in it, but it's all indoors and kind of, you know, food trucky, hippie kind of really, really good food in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then right near there is an area called the High Line, which is this old railway track that used to run above Manhattan, like all the way up and around. And there, it doesn't run anymore, but it's a park now with lots of food and live music that you can go and walk on, which is really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no tourists there ever. And then I would go down. I like the lower end of Manhattan. That's my favorite part, like below the grid. The West Village is nice. I prefer the East Village just because it has Washington Square Park, which has a big fountain. It's very green and very.
Didn't that used to be the area where people bought and sold drugs? Washington Square Park, wasn't it Needle Park?
I don't know, but that area, it's the probably village, clean now, didn't used to be a good area, the whole West Village.
But is it safe now?
Oh, that's where NYU is. Like the kind of middle to eastern part of lower Manhattan, below the numbers where the streets actually have names.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really nice area. And then the South Street Seaport, which is right near the Brooklyn Bridge, the bottom end of Manhattan. The South Street Seaport has a nice big boardwalk that you can walk on in an outdoor shopping area and lots of street food.
Is that where you get the ferry to the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, that's where you can take the ferry, or you can take the Circle Line, which goes all the way around Manhattan. It's like a 3-hour boat ride. So I'd probably do that area, and then you can walk across the Brooklyn Bridge, which is really nice, and it's just not nearly as crowded.
And when would you say is the best time of year to go?
Any time that like is not a normal vacation time. I would
avoid the tourists.
The worst times are definitely during the summer, like end of May to, you know, all the way through to around Thanksgiving time.
It's November.
Like end of November, because people come and they come for the summer, or then they come end of September, you know, September, October, November for that, the Thanksgiving parade. That, and then, well, probably worst is like during the summer, June, July, August, and even worse than that is from Thanksgiving, you know, mid to end of November,
mm-hmm.
all the way through to mid-January.
Because it's really cold.
Because it's really cold, it's really windy, and it's Christmas time. So everyone's on vacation, and everyone's shopping, and everyone is there. You walk into Times Square at 11:30 p.m. on, like, in any time in mid to end of December, and you can't even move.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you cannot walk. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's good tips. Very good tips.
In the spring, it's nice. Kind
yeah.
of like April, May.
So, New York, obviously, everybody knows, is one of the great metropolises of the world. Metropolis, big, big, big city. Becky, you're from Cornwall. Completely different story there, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Cornwall's not known for its urban areas. What would you recommend a tourist go to see in Cornwall?
Well, in Cornwall, we have got the longest coastline of anywhere in the whole of the UK. Basically, it's 360 plus miles long. So
yeah.
there's some fantastic beaches all the way around Cornwall. I couldn't really name
yeah.
them because it depends what you like. The north coast is far more rugged, I think.
When's the best time of the year to enjoy the beaches? Because uh-huh. the winter's probably not
winter. Winter would be a bit cold. But I would steer clear of the midsummer because it's a very tourist-rich area. So we get about 1 million people coming in the summer. So between July, end of July to through August, probably.
That's quite a small window.
That's when you should really avoid it.
Oh, avoid it?
Avoid it.
Okay.
So if you wanted to come, probably somewhere between May, June, beginning of July, and then maybe beginning of September. So
okay.
the weather's still nice, but you don't have so many people because the roads just get really, because it's very small and it's quite narrow in places,
yeah.
the roads get really, really congested,
crowded.
Really busy.
Now, Becky, Cornwall's a part of the United Kingdom that for all British and Irish people, because Ireland's next door to Cornwall as well, there are many stereotypes which instantly
yeah.
come to mind when you think of Cornwall.
Yeah.
Tell us a few of the stereotypes of Cornwall.
Well, because...
What's it associated with?
It's associated with things like smuggling,
mm-hmm.
Because of the amount of coastline.
You better explain the word smuggling. It might be tricky for our listeners.
Smuggling is when pirates
mm-hmm.
Would come into the coast in their boats, and they would bring merchandise.
Contraband.
Yeah.
It's similar in Spanish, isn't it?
Contraband.
Yeah, that's it.
And then they would go to different places that were known for smugglers to meet, and they would sell.
And this very, very long coastline was perfect for smuggling
perfect.
Then. Right.
So,
and you said a lot of it was rugged. We better
rugged.
Explain that rugged
rugged
means very rough, hard
Wild.
To get access to, not smooth, sandy
no,
beaches.
No.
Although there are smooth, sandy beaches in Cornwall,
yeah,
but there are also
ones.
Rugged bits which are perfect for smugglers to
mm.
hide their contraband.
Rocks and very rocky
things and very violent seas.
Yeah.
You can get into big trouble when you're sailing near Cornwall. The seas can be very violent
yeah.
there, can't it?
Yeah.
We're very famous for
so you've got
surfing.
You've got the pirates, you know, the smuggling, surfing, the sea. And then what about inland Cornwall, away from the sea? What's that famous for?
It's famous for farmland, but also moorland. We've got a big moor, a bobbing moor.
You better explain what a moor is.
Right. A moor is a high, it's a high area. There are not many trees. It's mostly plants like moss and heather and gorse, so it's very windy. There's lots of
so is it like a big open field
rocky.
That's high up, like
yeah.
a plain? Oh, sorry, I'm spitting at
no.
you. A big open field, like a plain that's high. Is that
they're usually
well, much bigger than a field? I mean, a huge area,
yeah.
And it's very rocky. So
I've been in the middle of Dartmoor,
yeah.
which is the most famous moor in the United Kingdom,
mm.
and it's huge.
Yeah.
And the feeling
yeah.
of isolation is incredible.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's very, very, very remote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Bodmin Moor isn't so big,
mm-hmm.
but it's
Bodmin Moor is close to Dartmoor.
It's close to Dartmoor, but it's just down a little at the top of Cornwall. But
So there's a lot of rural land in Cornwall,
yeah.
And a lot of it is farmed, but a lot of it is also wild.
Yeah,
nothing is done with it,
and it's also got a lot of sort of ancient standing stones and Celtic crosses, and so there's lots of legend attached to Cornwall. Things like, you know, King Arthur was from Cornwall, from Tintagel.
The Hound of the Baskervilles.
That's right. It happens in Dartmoor,
yeah,
doesn't it?
That's Dartmoor. So that's
the Sherlock Holmes story.
That's in Devon, yeah.
Wuthering Heights.
No, Wuthering Heights is Yorkshire, surely, isn't it?
Is it?
Cornwall is more like Daphne du Maurier, Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Creek.
Right.
The House on the Strand. Mm-hmm. Those sorts of.
Is it? You said Bodmin Moor. Is there an expression in Cornwall if somebody's Bodmin, they're crazy?
Yeah.
You say he's Bodmin or she's Bodmin?
If he's a bit Bodmin.
He's a bit Bodmin.
Yeah. That means, because in Bodmin...
You work in Bodmin, don't you?
I work in Bodmin. I've worked in Bodmin for 13 years, so I'm a bit Bodmin. But but there was a big asylum.
For the mentally challenged.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So
colloquially known as a nut house.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that existed.
So if you were showing signs of being a little crazy, people would say, oh, we're going to send you in asylum, or you're going to go up Bodmin. You say you're a bit Bodmin, it means, you know, it harks back to that.
God, I've just thought, so Bodmin, which is in Cornwall, has the most famous asylum, or had the most famous asylum.
Jail.
And then Dartmoor.
Yeah.
Prison,
yeah.
I think, is still open today, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's probably the most notorious, the most famous prison in the UK, the hardest one to escape from.
And it's
kind of like the UK's Alcatraz,
because
San Francisco.
There's no transport around it.
You can't escape from it.
It's very remote because it's in the moorland.
Well, I just wanted to ask both of you what you've done since you've been in Valencia visiting here. Have you already visited the Central Market?
I got in at half 12 last night and went to sleep and woke up.
So you haven't done much, okay?
Haven't done anything yet.
What about you, Becky? Have you visited the Central Market yet, El Mercado Central?
No, I'm really looking forward to that because last time I came to Valencia, that was the one thing I didn't do.
Oh, yeah, you should go. Take your camera.
So we're planning a trip on Wednesday morning, I think.
Yep.
But yesterday I went for a walk around the city, so I went into the Bullring.
The old quarter did you go to?
And then I went to the cathedral and through some beautiful squares. It was a really lovely walk.
And it's nice weather this time of year as well.
It was perfect.
I guess you've already had a paella.
No, I haven't.
No, in Valencia? You haven't had a paella yet?
No, I didn't have one.
Is that a paella?
I didn't have one when I came to visit you last time.
What?
No.
We should fix that.
We should fix that. We should go for one. We should take Melissa and Becky for paella.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Because it originated in Valencia.
Really, I love paella.
Good. We will take you.
We always end up talking about food a lot, don't we?
I wonder
clotted
why.
Cream, paella, scones.
Dulce de leche.
Dulce de leche, yeah. And if I ever go to New York, I want to have pastrami on rye.
Pastrami on rye is good. You want to have a New York street hot dog. That's what you want. $1 hot or $1 pizza.
$1? I'm not sure I do.
No, that's the best. $1 pizza, 99-cent slice of cheese pizza on the street is the best pizza you will ever have.
Really?
Absolutely.
So to finish, I'd like to do something that I've called the quick fire hot seat, in which I'm going to ask all three of you the same question, and as quickly as you can, tell me what you think. Reza, what makes you happy?
Food. And talking about it.
Melissa, what makes you happy?
I like food.
You can't piggyback on the...
That was what I thought of, the first thing that came to mind. I like different kinds of food, like traveling to different countries and tasting their foods, especially Italy.
Becky?
Friends, but always involving some sort of food, travel sometimes, and jazz maybe.
And jazz? Reza, what annoys you?
Too much paperwork.
Melissa?
Writing papers.
Becky?
People who complain about having to work 15 hours a week.
I wonder who that could be.
Is she referring to people who teach English as a foreign language?
I wonder who she could be referring to. Reza, what one thing If you were to tell someone about yourself, would they find it difficult to believe?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Take your time.
Difficult to believe.
So I'll come back to you.
Yeah, I need to think about it.
Melissa, what one thing, if you would tell someone about yourself, they would find it difficult or surprising to believe?
Oh, that I am doing a dual degree, in one is in science and one is in theater.
That surprised me. You're taking science and drama.
Animal science and drama.
Yeah.
Two degrees, two separate programs.
You could be acting in a science film.
I'm going to have a show on Animal Planet. That's what I'm planning so
that's
far.
That's a good plan.
Right, yeah.
Becky?
I think probably people who meet me now would be surprised by the fact that I'm a qualified ballet dancer and teacher.
Oh, really?
Are you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. See? There you go.
That's
surprising.
And Reza will back me up on that, won't you?
Yeah, I saw a few of her moves this morning.
Show
me a few of her steps. Would be the word, a few dance steps.
Yeah.
Oh, she's good.
I have my leg on the kitchen table.
Really?
Yes.
We'll save that for the after hours podcast. Reza, have you thought of something?
Oh, that people would find difficult to believe about me. Okay, I tell you what. One of these things, everybody's done it, you think, but no, we haven't. I haven't seen any Star Wars film complete.
Mia, I've never seen any Star Wars film.
At all?
Really?
Oh, God, you're weirder than me.
Me neither.
I know what the
hell. We're a group of weirdos.
Oh, I've seen all of them.
Really?
I love Star Wars.
I'm not much of a science fiction person.
I love science fiction. That's my favourite genre.
I haven't seen or read any Harry Potter either.
Oh, that's just a shame.
And
you're from
that's another one. Yeah,
that's like your holy grail, right?
I haven't seen any Lord of the Rings. Neither.
No, me neither.
I haven't read.
Or me neither. Do you say neither or neither?
I say neither.
Oh, you say neither. I thought most Americans said neither.
I'm weird.
But many Americans do say neither.
Neither.
They're both correct.
I like how neither sounds. It sounds
weird. Reza, which famous person, dead or alive, would you like to have dinner with? I think I know the answer.
Oh, George Orwell, definitely.
Yes.
George Orwell.
Really interesting person.
Really?
Yeah.
1984 is my favorite book.
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant book.
That's
interesting books. He taught, by the way, taught English for a bit. He lived in Spain. Very interesting person. Yeah. Yeah. I find his writing very interesting and his life. Yeah. A bit of a maverick. A maverick would be a person who's a little bit different and kind of does things in their own particular way.
Stands out from the crowd.
Original, yeah. Very interesting.
Melissa, apart from George Orwell, which famous person would you like to have a drink or dinner with?
I would love to have dinner with Audrey Hepburn.
Why?
Well, so would I.
For different reasons.
For very different reasons, I imagine.
I just love her. I don't know, there's just something about her that's just like mystique, kind of mysterious, almost a mystique. Kind of, like, obviously she's gorgeous and I would love to get some fashion tips from her. But I would just love to hear about, you know, because she was alive in a very different time when like very different things were acceptable and women were not, you know, viewed in the same way they are today. And, you know, her films are just, you know, portray a very specific kind of a culture and lifestyle, and I would love to talk with her about, you know, working as an actress in that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of her film, Breakfast at Tiffany's, is probably one of my favorite movies, and I
like it too.
She's just such a, I don't know, she died so young, she like,
yeah,
just,
so sad, and she did a lot of good work for charity as well.
Yeah, she
children
just, I would love to talk to her, get some tips.
Okay, Becky?
I think probably Dylan Thomas, because
have a drink with him.
Yeah. or two, or three, or four.
He liked his drink.
Yeah, but he was exceptionally talented as a writer and a poet. But also, I liked his attitude to life. You know,
what was his attitude to life?
It's very much about enjoying yourself, being fairly hedonistic, and sucking life up, really. So, I think he'd probably be interested.
Did he die young, Dylan Thomas?
Yeah, 39, in New York.
Okay.
He went drinking in Greenwich Village and
never came home.
He did
get home, but then he went to hospital.
Craig, can I take you by surprise and ask you a quick question? Quick fire, you've been asking us. You asked us, what makes you happy? Craig, what makes you unhappy?
Death, pain,
taxes.
the
I wish I'd never asked.
Futility of life. People.
Oh God! Stop there! Stop there!
World hunger. People dying for no reason. Corrupt politicians. Okay. I could go on.
Okay, I regret asking that question. You depressed us now.
It's going to give a depressing answer.
Wow, that's true.
I used to ask what makes you happy, what makes you sad, for some video interviews that I've done, and I changed it to what makes you happy, what makes you annoyed, which is kind of lighter than what makes you sad, because people usually say
like
death.
Petty things that make you annoyed.
Yeah. Who would you like to meet, Craig, if you had a choice?
Who would I like to meet if I had a choice? Gandhi.
Really?
Mm.
Why do you say Gandhi? What attracts you to
Gandhi? Well, he defeated the British Empire by peaceful means, and I think there's so much sort of terrorism in the world today. That you could, so much you could learn from him of how to approach life, and his philosophy was amazing.
Do you know, I'm surprised you said Gandhi, because I'd always had this impression of you that you'd quite like to meet Mickey Mouse.
Have you been waiting all this time?
Yeah,
you have,
absolutely.
You? And you've been prepped.
Yes. Listen, high five, high five, high five. Yes.
Oh, dear.
You've been prepped. And
we answered really seriously about Gandhi, and I look you in the face.
We got him.
Looking very profane.
I think the appropriate expression is, gotcha. Two more questions. Reza, in an ideal world, what would your life be like?
If it's possible, I would do even less work than those 15 hours.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
I would travel a lot more. I would have a couple of houses in different parts of the world. But I would like to be able to dedicate more time helping people who really need help. I know everybody says that, you know, but I really would love to be able to do it, you know. But I must admit, I'm selfish at the minute, and right now I just kind of, I'm more concerned about making money for myself. But if I could, I'd like to help people more and travel a bit.
You could always do some voluntary work.
Could do, yeah. Could do.
Could.
Yeah.
Could is the key word.
You do a bit, don't you, actually?
Yeah, I do.
Tell us a little bit about your voluntary work.
I work on Saturdays. I work at a homeless soup kitchen in Cornwall, because even though Cornwall's got, you know, it's a beautiful place to come on holiday, there are a lot of people there who haven't got anywhere to live and, you know, are struggling. So,
so
I do that. And I've got to say, I didn't really think I'd have the time to do it, but it's very, very rewarding.
Okay.
So I went once and then I've been going ever since.
Well, people say that is one of the best ways to be happy, is to give to other people.
Yes.
And there's no bureaucracy. There's no paperwork. All that sort of stuff. You just go and you do it. And
You said most people there are homeless.
Yeah,
that's a good word in English for the listeners. It's an adjective, and it means, it describes a person who doesn't have a home. Homeless. In Spanish, you've got to say sin techo. It's two words.
Without roof. Melissa, in an ideal world, what would your life be like?
If money were no object, is this our ideal world? Well, you know, obviously I would love to spend more time traveling the world, but I can't really say that because I've been to like 9 countries in the past.
You're not doing too bad.
That's
a lot.
No,
you're only 20.
I'm doing pretty well. I'm pretty well traveled, I would consider myself. I would love to spend more time outdoors. I love backpacking. I spent 3 months backpacking out west through the Rocky Mountains two years ago. And I just loved living outside. Like, if it were possible to live, you know, like that permanently.
Did you sleep in a tent?
Yeah, when it wasn't nice out. You know, when we were in the Grand Canyon, we slept right on the beach.
Right on the beach?
Right on the Colorado,
Wow.
Which was nice. I would love to just live, you know, with a backpack, you know, traveling from place to place.
Sounds good. And Becky, in an ideal world, what would your life be like?
I think I'd have to have a reason to get out of bed, so I would quite happily not work for somebody else and get paid for it. And if in an ideal world I'd have enough money to be able to do, say, volunteering or something when I wanted to. And for,
so you think you'd volunteer yourself full time if you didn't have to think about money?
No, probably not full time, but a mixture of maybe volunteering and having time to relax and travel. But also the other thing I'd really like is I'd like to not have to worry about any health issues at all. Not have to worry about, you know, be able to eat and drink whatever I wanted without suffering any side effects.
No, I think that's,
that'd be nice.
That's something everybody would like to
And finally, Reza, if you could change something about your character, what would you change?
I know one thing that you would like me to change, and I would change, to be more punctual. Another thing would be to be less frank. I think sometimes I'm too frank.
Really?
Yes. Too blunt, yeah. Blunt is like saying things in a hard way.
Too honest.
Without
not really having a filter.
But that's just being honest, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But sometimes I think I overdo it. Overdo. That means you do something excessively. And perhaps that's not always perfect.
That surprises me, because I see you as someone very considerate, very polite, very aware of other people's feelings. Mm-hmm. Very sensitive. I can't imagine.
Oh, I think I like to think I am, Craig. But I just think sometimes I'm a bit too frank. Sometimes I tell people, I answer their questions honestly, or if someone's annoying me, I tell them, and perhaps I shouldn't really.
I think it depends with you who you're talking to. If you actually care about the person or your friend or something,
I think
you,
that's true.
You will put your filter on.
Yeah. Yes.
But if somebody's irritated, you don't like them very much, you'll tell them the truth.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe. Melissa, same question. If you could change something about your character, what would you like to change?
I would like to take more risks, be less afraid of. I'm very afraid of like heights and like
heights, high places.
Yeah, I'm like scared of heights and like I don't know. I just tend to overthink doing things that like are risky and dangerous. And I would love to, you know, be less afraid of doing things.
Do you consider yourself a spontaneous person?
Yeah, I definitely do. But spontaneous in like a conservative way. Like I tend to stay in my comfort zone a lot of the time. I'll do fun, big, crazy things, but there'll be things that, like, I'll stay within the boundaries of what I'm comfortable with and what I'm confident in my abilities, and I would like to be able to kind of go outside of that a little more without being so worried about every little thing that could happen.
Becky?
I'd like to be more confident.
You seem quite a confident person.
Yeah.
Very outgoing, very friendly, very open.
Yeah.
But I know that's how I come across, but I'm not at all. There's always these questions of everything. Is it good enough? Or being worried about how well I'm doing absolutely everything. If I'm liked, you know, silly things like that. But, yeah, so it's about having that inner confidence.
I find that a lot of people who are outwardly outgoing and, you know, like kind of have big, loud personalities have a lot of, it's like kind of a face to put on to kind of deter people from actually getting to,
I think that's true.
Like the what's kind of inside.
Yeah, like a camouflage, like a mask on top of their insecurities.
No one's ever going to think you're insecure if you're big and loud and singing and, you know, going crazy all the time.
Yeah, we've all had students like that, haven't we?
Yeah. And what about you, Craig? What would you like to change about yourself?
When Melissa said that, I also think that as I'm getting older, my comfort zone's getting smaller. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to get outside of my comfort zone, try different things. It's not be afraid to change routines. But I'm a very routine-centered person. I like being organized. So that's one thing I'd like to change. Just do different things. Just experiment and just do something. Walk a different way home for a change. Or drink tea instead of coffee. Can start with small things and gradually go out of your comfort zone and do different things.
You should drink tea instead of coffee.
I drink tea in the UK and coffee in Spain because the coffee's better in Spain and the tea's better in the UK.
That's
generally speaking.
Yeah. That's true.
Generally speaking.
I enjoy the coffee very much.
But when I go and visit mum and dad in Spain, I always have a cup of tea. Reza, anything you want to add before we wrap up?
Okay. One more question about the future. What do you see yourself doing in 5 years' time? Melissa, first.
In 5 years, I'll probably be in grad school getting a master's degree. Mm-hmm. Or just finishing and, you know, getting my first job.
If you do a grad thing, will that be in the University of Massachusetts? Or will you come to New York to do that?
No. What I want to get my master's in, which is equine management, there's
equine management.
Yeah, like what? To be
that's horses, isn't it? Managing horses.
Currently my major is animal science with a concentration in animal management, and I'd like to go further into equine management and go into barn management, like be a riding instructor and eventually run my own equestrian center. And there's very few programs in the U.S. that do that. There's a handful. One in Colorado, Tennessee, Texas. I think that might be it. There's maybe three or four of
them. So you're quite restricted where you can actually study that.
So that's
an interesting. That's an interesting career.
I'd love to move out west eventually. So like, I would love to move out to Colorado. Or
when you're qualified and you have your own place, can I come and ride horses?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
I love horses.
Come on over.
Okay.
What about you, Becky, in 5 years? What do you think you'll be doing?
In 5 years' time, I have no idea. And that's what I quite like about my life at the moment. I don't know what I'm going to be doing in 5 months' time. So, yeah, so there's lots of options, and I'm just going to see how things turn out and what happens and where I end up. Hopefully, I'll have done a bit more travelling. Hopefully, I'll be still well and happy, but
do you think there's a possibility, even small, that you might come to Spain to try living for a while?
Yeah, there is quite a possibility, because I've recently got my teaching qualifications, so I've got an option to do that. Also, I've got friends here, and I think the weather, the warmth, is actually good for me health-wise. And I think it's actually a nice, mentally, it's a good quality of life.
We agree, don't we, Reza?
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you want to leave Belfast? Spain? Like, what's here?
It was hard, you know, leaving the Guinness behind was hard. But and potato bread, oh, have you tried?
Oh, my God. An Ulster.
There we go, talking about food again.
Like an Ulster fry. Oh, my God.
Like an Ulster fry.
Don't worry, I can make potato bread. Your mother taught me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I learned how to make bread.
His mother taught you how to make potato bread.
Yeah, and his dad taught me how to make Indian fried rice.
Wow. Fantastic. And don't forget the fig rolls. You left the fig rolls behind in Belfast. Fig rolls.
Oh, God, my favourite biscuit. Craig keeps me supplied. He gives me a top-up every once in a while. He goes down to the Costa Blanca, where you can get them because there's a lot of foreigners, and he brings them up for me. You can't get them in Valencia. There aren't enough foreigners here.
If I'd known, I'd have brought you some.
Yeah, I could have brought you some.
Yeah. Do you like fig rolls?
I haven't had them yet.
You don't get them in America, no?
No.
Bea doesn't like them.
No, she certainly doesn't. Bea was our last guest. She hates fig rolls.
I'll get something for next time you come to Cornwall.
Okay, well, thank you for listening. Thank you very much to our very special guests, Melissa and Becky. And thank you to Reza. And we'll see you all in the next episode.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.